Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about commercial logging in Flathead National Forest, an update on the vape ban, and who will manage the Crow Tribe's financial assets. It's Thursday, December 19th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. In the historic vote making Donald Trump the third president to be impeached by Congress, Montana U.S. Representative Greg Gianforte voted against the articles. The full House voted last night to impeach President Trump, alleging abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates-Carney reports.
In a brief speech on the floor of the U.S. House Wednesday afternoon, Gianforte repeated his defense of President Trump. And he said Democrats' rage against the president has blinded their judgment.
I will vote against this partisan impeachment sham.
Gianforte was elected Montana's lone voice in the U.S. House in a special election in 2017 and won re-election last year. He is now running in the state's Republican primary race for governor. I'm Corin Cates-Carney. Montana Public Radio News.
Two wolf pups from a famous wolf pack in Yellowstone were killed by a car last month in the park. Rachel Kramer reports.
The male and female pups were fatally hit around sunset on the road between Tower Junction and the northeast entrance. Yellowstone law enforcement officers are still investigating what happened. The park's senior wolf biologist, Doug Smith, said in a press release that their exposure to and fearlessness of people on roads could have been a factor in their death. The two pups were part of the Junction Butte Pack, one of the most frequently observed groups of wolves in Yellowstone. According to the press release, the pack of 11 adults had a den of pups this summer near a popular hiking trail in the northeastern part of Yellowstone. Park officials closed the area around the den to prevent the wolves from getting used to humans. Some people illegally entered the closed area, and others approached the pups when they were on or near the trail to take a photo. Yellowstone staff hazed the pups several times over the last 5 months in an attempt to make them more wary of people on roads, but park officials say the effort was never fully successful. The park estimates there are less than 100 wolves in Yellowstone. Officials say visitors should stay at least 100 yards from wolves, never enter a closed area, and notify a park ranger of others who are in violation of these rules. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
Some businesses in Billings are calling for Congress to fully fund the Land and Water Conservation Fund. They say access to the outdoors helps them recruit and keep employees in eastern Montana. Kayla DeRoche reports.
Randy Hafer, co-owner of Billings-based High Plains Architects, says he almost always recruits talent from outside the city.
We have to sell ourselves and what we're doing on the one hand, but we really have to sell the community. And so it's a very important part of getting good quality people here is having good quality lifestyle amenities.
This week, member-based coalition and advocacy group Business for Montana's Outdoors released a report that outlines how the Land and Water Conservation Fund increases individual and community health and supports the outdoor economy in the state. The LWCF uses tax revenue from offshore drilling projects to fund the maintenance and establishment of city and county trails, baseball fields, and other public spaces in states like Montana. The group held a panel of Billings-based professionals Tuesday who talked about the ways their companies benefit from the fund. Luke Kobold with Billings Clinic said recruiting is the hospital's biggest need and outdoor recreation is the reason most interested candidates follow up.
The other two are schools and cultural access. We lose a lot of providers that leave because a spouse is unhappy with what opportunities they might have. So it's kind of more than just taking in the beauty. It's taking in the whole of our health as a community, in my opinion.
The report from Business for Montana's Outdoors says LWCF fuels the outdoor economy, supports forest industry jobs, and maintains access to areas where people fish, hike, and hunt. According to the State Office of Outdoor Recreation, the industry pulls in more than $7 billion of revenue a year. The Trump administration reauthorized LWCF this year. Republican Senator Steve Daines and Democratic Senator John Tester are among the legislators co-sponsoring a bill to fully fund LWCF at $900 million annually. The Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources will discuss the bill on Thursday. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
The Flathead National Forest announced a large project yesterday that proposes commercial logging in areas usually protected from that activity. Officials say it aims to reduce wildfire risk to private homes near the North Fork of the Flathead River. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports.
The U.S. Forest Service is currently in the scoping phase for the Frozen Moose Project, which proposes roughly 3,500 acres of commercial logging. Most of that work would take place on general forest lands, but some logging projects would fall within roadless areas and the Wild and Scenic Flathead River Corridor. Both designations generally protect areas from commercial logging, but the Forest Service says the work falls under an exception that allows commercial logging aimed at reducing wildfire risk to private property. Project coordinator Sarah Canepa says fires along the North Fork of the Flathead River historically have moved quickly to the east.
Our goal is to try to create a fuels buffer to the west of these private properties to modify fire behavior before it reaches the private property along the North Fork Road.
The project also includes about 4,600 acres of non-commercial thinning and prescribed burns, as well as white bark pine restoration. The Forest Service hopes to finalize the project by next winter. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
A Montana man connected to a casino shooting that left three people dead had a long criminal history and was being sought by police before the attack. Documents revealed yesterday say the 41-year-old had convictions for assaulting a police officer, robbery, and other crimes, and was wanted on assault allegations. Authorities shot and killed him close to the casino, where another person was wounded early Tuesday in the city of Great Falls. A woman accused of harboring the suspect and who was with him just before the shooting is facing charges. She appeared in court yesterday. A statewide temporary ban on the sale of flavored vaping products is now in place after a last-minute legal move from store owners failed to block it. The ban is set to run until April 16th. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
Ravalli County District Court Judge Jennifer Lint's highly anticipated ruling was over 6 weeks in the making. Vape store owners filed suit against Governor Steve Bullock's order temporarily banning the sale of flavored products in early October. The verdict? The state can now enforce emergency rules temporarily restricting the sale of flavored e-cigarette products in Montana. Governor Bullock's chief legal counsel, Rafe Graybill, calls the decision a huge win for Montanans.
Because it confirms what doctors in our state have been saying for 6 weeks now, which is that we know that there are short-term risks associated with vaping, and we frankly don't know the long-term risks associated with vaping.
The state's temporary ban includes the sale of flavored nicotine, THC, and CBD vape products, both in brick-and-mortar stores and online. Recreational use of THC, the component of marijuana that gets people high, was already illegal here. Graybill, a candidate in the Democratic Party's primary race for attorney general, helped argue the state's position before Judge Lint.
So many young people in Montana have access to these products. You know, 60% of high school students have tried these. 30% of middle school students have tried these products. We know they're dangerous. We know the long-term effects of nicotine use can be devastating. And I think the court was really strong in drawing a line saying we need to act and we need to protect young people in our state.
Montana's newly implemented emergency ban comes in the wake of the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention urging the public to avoid all THC vape products, as well as those obtained on the black market. The CDC recommends not using any e-cigarette or vaping products while its investigation continues. The state health department says there have been 7 cases of vape-related lung illness in Montana and 1 fatality. The Montana vape shops that fought the ban say THC and black market vape products were responsible for the vaping-related illnesses seen in Montana and the country. Those stores don't sell those products. They also argue that if the temporary ban goes into effect, they'd be forced to lay off workers. In her ruling, Judge Lint noted their economic harm argument was not proven in court, adding protection of public health is more important than, quote, preventing economic harm to vapor product businesses, end quote. Montana Public Radio reached out Wednesday to several e-cig and vape stores, including some involved in the case, for comment. All declined our interview requests. Several referred us to attorney Megan Windrell, who represented their case in court. Windrell also did not respond. The temporary ban will be enforced using both citizen complaints and inspections by local health officials. The state is notifying affected retailers with detailed letters. That information is also posted on the agency's website. According to Missoula City County Health Department Director Ellen Leahy, there are almost 200 vape stores in Missoula.
You know, this does not require that we inspect 195 places, as we often do with any regulation. We rely on the cooperation of the regulated community.
Leahy says local officials aren't going into the temporary ban with a hard-nosed attitude, but are prepared to enforce the rules.
We will visit if there's a complaint, and after there's been enough time for folks to reorganize their store and to decide how they're going to comply or not, we will be able to do some spot checking or something like that, but we're not going to inspect 195 places.
So at first, this is complaint-based. This is not a big major sting operation, though.
No, there will be no sting operations whatsoever.
Meaning officials will not use minors to attempt to illegally purchase vape products. Someone who violates the new temporary rules can be charged with a misdemeanor punishable by jail time not exceeding 6 months and a fine of up to $500. Leahy says she does not anticipate her staff will be greeted with resistance from Montana vape store retailers who disagree with the emergency rule. Still, she says,
if there's any reason, for any time, to think that they may be at risk, we will contact local law enforcement and get their advice. And if their advice is to have assistance, we would get that.
Almost nobody believes this story ends here. Not even Governor Bullock's chief legal counsel, Rafe Graybill. I asked him about that. Are we taking bets yet on when the petitioners are going to challenge this?
I don't know yet. I think you're right. An appeal seems likely from the petitioners. We'll make the same arguments we made all along. This ban isn't about being difficult. It isn't about targeting businesses. We know a significant number of young people in our state have been enticed into using these products. We know these products are dangerous. And until we get some meaningful action from the federal government, we can't stand by idly and let young people in our state get hurt.
If an appeal is filed, the Montana Supreme Court would decide next whether or not to take the case. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
The Billings Chamber of Commerce has started to remove part of its campaign that was criticized by a local blogger, saying campaign language and imagery was tone-deaf and racist. The Billings Gazette reports that blogger Alexis Bonagofsky published an article Monday criticizing three billboards reading Onward Pioneer and Conquer New Endeavors. Officials say the campaign tagline read, "Today is ours for the taking, and tomorrow too." The blogger argued the campaign was not culturally sensitive to hundreds of years of genocide, forced assimilation, and racism against Native Americans. Executives say the intent was not malicious or to be racist. The Crow legislature had a big vote that had tribal members on the edge of their seat last week. They were voting to decide who was going to manage the tribe's multi-million dollar accounts that resulted from a federal water rights settlement, First Interstate Bank in Billings, or a financial advisor from New York City. Olivia Rheingold reports.
No one checked their phones or even glanced up when someone new struggled to find a place to stand at Friday's special session. Jackie Yellowtail was one of those rapt crowd members.
I've got grandkids and great-grandkids whose decisions they make today are going to affect those children.
I wasn't allowed to record the meeting, but here's what happened. First, Crow Facebook groups were swirling with rumors about alleged fiscal mismanagement and a man with a black mark on his record who wanted to turn things around. The Crow tribe is sitting on about $250 million, stemming from a much larger water rights settlement it got from the federal government over a decade ago. Earlier this year, a financial advisor named Chad Pouliot was sitting in his New York office when he got a call from the pro tem mayor of Las Vegas, Michelle Fiore. She asked if he would help a tribe in need. Now Pouliot is working as an unpaid consultant for the Crow Tribe and says he can better manage the water settlement fund. The special session was about who should have that job, First Interstate, where the settlement funds are now, or Pouliot. Two rows of constituents looked on as Pouliot claimed he could make the tribe rich, and bankers from First Interstate said his claims equated to theft. Newly elected Senator Samson DeCrane addressed his constituents in a video after the session.
This Charles Pouliot, Chad Pouliot, he brought his A game. You know, he told us what he wanted us to hear.
DeCrane says he was uncomfortable with how fast this was all moving. He was only sworn in a week earlier.
You know, when I want to buy something over $1,000, I pray about it. I look into it, research it.
Before the legislature broke for lunch, Pouliot stood up and asked how many people in the room had gotten loans from First Interstate. When was the last time the bank made an investment in the community, he asked. People started clapping. Someone shouted, "Why is there a bank in Lame Deer but not Crow?" Elders shushed. Brian Brown, the Billings area manager for First Interstate, tried to explain that the bank has outstanding federal ratings for its community engagement and lending practices. He said that First Interstate, which has over $13 billion in assets, has donated $50,000 to the community in recent years. Senator Frank Whiteclay doesn't think that's good enough, but still voted to keep the funds at the bank. That's because Pouliot wanted $1.2 million for managing the money. First Interstate said they could do the same job for about $310,000. Whiteclay says that's a big difference.
That's $800,000. That's the tribe's money, the people's money.
Back in the room, the legislature sat down to vote. It came down to a tie. Then Darwin Spotted grabbed his mic. "I'd like to change my vote," he said, breaking the tie with a no vote. The bill failed. People started clearing the room. Pouliot walked by, his head hung low. "It's a sad day for the Crow people," he said. But later, in a sitting room at his Billings apartment, he told me it actually wasn't that bad of a day.
"Today, the vote went the wrong way. However, the people are speaking. They want a change to happen."
Another thing they're speaking about is him. A Facebook post questioning his past as a financial advisor at Merrill Lynch is circulating. "There's no rest for the wicked," one commenter wrote. Pouliot says, yes, he was fired from Merrill Lynch, but he says it was because of a misunderstanding. It's the only disclosure listed on documents from the Securities and Exchange Commission.
They found that I had reimbursed an expense with my own, quote unquote, my own pre-tax money for $100. It was a dentist bill that I categorized as a professional service.
An industry database says he was fired for filing inaccurate business expenses. Now he works for Bridgeway Wealth Partners in Manhattan, where he says he manages funds for celebrity and high net worth clients. For the past 4 months, he's been flying to Billings to work on a full audit of the Crow Tribe.
So you have no per diem or anything?
Nothing. There's no strings attached.
He says it's worthwhile for lots of reasons, including that it's the right thing to do, but also because he wants the Crow to be a test case.
"I want this to be such an amazing turnaround story where this could be an example for more tribal nations and how we can help them."
Yellowtail, the concerned grandmother, says it's time for the tribe to help themselves. She says she wants the Crow Tribe to manage its own assets. First Interstate declined to comment. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Olivia Reingold.
Olivia Reingold is Yellowstone Public Radio's Report for America core member. And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.